The ground trembled underneath her, and she paused, turning towards Vir. "The lightning god's fury!" Vir shouted, and swung his staff towards the ground. A vortex of air swirled around his body, silencing the whole region. All eyes, competitors and spectators alike, widened.
"Aren't all the competitors under 25?
The Pope asked the king. The king nodded with his mouth open. Hundreds of thunderbolts rained down from the sky, obliterating the golems and setting fire to the field. The competitors fell onto their hands and knees as the ground shook from the impacts. The children in the crowd of spectators wailed in their mother's arms. "This," Michelle said, before shaking her head and scrambling to her feet. A white aura surrounded her body as she chanted, ignoring the ringing in her ears. Vir snorted and raised his staff, ignoring everyone's gazes. He closed his eyes as low murmurs escaped from his lips.
"That's monstrous," the Pope said, as he raised a barrier around himself and the king. "We need to have him."
The king chuckled.
"Well, he is clearly going to win."
"That's not what I meant," the Pope said as he lowered his voice. "Imagine if a sacred spirit rested inside of his body instead of just blessing it."
The king's eyes narrowed.
"Your daughter and my son are part of this, too," he said. "I refuse."
"We can let the spirits bless all the winners normally," the Pope said as he waved his hand. "Then we wait a year for the spirits to recover and invite the boy back for some other reasons."
The king rubbed his chin as he narrowed his eyes at Vir.
"Can the possession fail?"
"The spirits aren't that weak."
A white pillar of light rained down from the sky and crashed into the burning field, removing the fire and recovering the golem's injuries. Their disintegrated bodies reformed, dust particle by dust particle. Michelle gasped and broke out into a cold sweat as she stumbled. Her face was pale, but her lips were drawn into a wide smile. A ball of lightning formed in the air above the golems, crackling but not striking. Sweat rolled down Vir's back as more and more balls of lightning manifested in the air. He tapped Lillian's shoulder and pointed at the golems as he continued chanting. Lillian furrowed her brow before loading her bow. The other competitors glanced at each other and proceeded with their own attacks when they realized Vir wasn't going to strike. Lillian loosed her arrow and cracked a golem. A noble smirked and followed up with a ball of fire. Vir snorted, and a lightning ball tore the golem apart before the fireball reached it. The noble glared at Vir, who didn't even notice his gaze. Every time a noble was about to destroy a golem, a bolt of lightning would strike it. The only exceptions were Roy, who was able to destroy the golems with a single surprise hit from underground, and Lillian. Vir ignored the jeers and gazes for a full hour, continuously chanting and forming more balls of lightning. The lightning only dissipated when the referee called time.
"For the ranged competition, first place goes to Verder, with a total of 97 golems destroyed," the referee announced. "Second place goes to Roy, with a total of 20 golems destroyed. Third place goes to Lillian, with a total of 8 golems destroyed."
"That wasn't fair!"
The other competitor shouted and booed the referee. Yells of agreement rang throughout the field. Vir crossed his arms as he focused on regaining his breath. Rivulets of sweat ran down his body, soaking the ground beneath.
"Shut up!" Michelle yelled. "All of you, just shut up!"
The students froze with their mouths open. Michelle's face turned red and she let out a cough.
"I'm disappointed in every one of you. You should be ashamed. None of you wanted to fight Verder in a one-on-one match, so you petitioned for a group competition where you could gang up on him and Lillian."
She put her hands on her hips. "Now you're crying because the two of them beat you? This isn't how nobles of prestigious households should act."
"Well said,"
the king said and nodded at her. She smiled back. The referee cleared his throat.
"And the winner of the healer competition goes to Michelle, with a total of 83 golems healed."
The spectators applauded.
"The warrior competition will begin in an hour after the field has been adjusted."
Vir turned to face the competing nobles.
"I'm sorry," he said. "It must feel terrible to lose to a backwater noble. My condolences."
He turned around and walked out of the field, followed by a smiling Lillian.
"That was amazing! I thought I was going to go deaf," Paul said as he burst out into laughter. "It doesn't matter if Lillian offended every single noble in the capital. You're definitely worth more." He thumped Ver's shoulder. "Let's celebrate. Drinks on me."
Michelle cleared her throat next to the trio. "Hi," she said. "Can I come too?" Lillian tilted her head and creased her brow.
"You don't hate me?"
she asked as she edged towards Paul.
"It was only a dress," Michelle said. "And a shower got rid of the puke smell."
"Not completely," Ver said.
"Excuse me?"
"Nothing."
"You're not going to watch the warrior competition?"
"Like I'd want to watch that obnoxious twit," Michelle said, as she glanced at Lillian and grinned.
"I mean, if you don't mind," Lillian said as she scratched her head. "I thought he was your boyfriend, you know, with the way he was acting and all."
Michelle rolled her eyes. "He's not. He's just very... ugh."
"Oh,"
Lillian said as she placed her hands on Paul's shoulders.
"This is Paul. He's my cousin."
She turned towards Paul.
"You should know who she is, unlike someone."
Her eyes slitted towards Burr.
Hello, Paul said, his face tinged with a faint red color. "What do I address you as?"
"Just call me Michelle,"
Michelle said and curtsied.
Paul nodded and wheeled around. All right. Drinks, yeah?"
he asked, as he wheeled his face to cool down.
Ver said to Lillian, "He seems to be unwell."
Lillian smirked. 33.
"Lady Toffle, the young master from the House of Sinloss has sent you another gift,"
Redder said as he stood in front of an oak door.
"Again? Didn't I tell him to leave me alone?"
Toffle's voice came from behind the door.
"He's very obstinate, my lady. I'm afraid he'll keep pestering you until you give him a chance."
Toffle sighed as she got dressed. She observed herself in the mirror and adjusted her hair before nodding.
"Can I execute him?"
she asked as she strapped her sword to her back.
I'm just a sentry, Lady Toffle. It would be better to ask your mother that question."
Toffle opened the door and stepped out as Redder moved aside.
"You've been in employment since my father was the Demon Lord," she said, and narrowed her eyes at him. "Surely you must have some opinion on the matter."
"As a sentry, my opinion should not hold any weight in the upper echelons,"
Redder said, as sweat rolled down his back.
"But if my lady insists on knowing, I think you shouldn't execute him. The Sinloss family is a major backer of the capital. They contributed a lot to the reconstruction of the city after the zombie incident."
Toffle sighed.
"Fine. Tell him he has to obtain 3 things before he can meet with me. The tooth of an infant dragon, the fart of a unicorn, and the hairs from the eyebrows of a phoenix."
"Understood," Redder said as he nodded his head. "The tooth of an infant dragon, the fart of a unicorn, and the hairs from the eyebrows of a phoenix."
His brow creased.
"Do phoenixes even have eyebrows?"
"Nope,"
Toffle said as she stretched her arms above her head.
"I need a vacation from all this demon lord work. Tell my mom to substitute in for me. Thanks."
Her horns glowed silver and she disappeared from the hall.
"But it's only your 3rd day, Redder mumbled as he scratched his head.
He shrugged and proceeded towards Mina's living chambers.
Lindis rubbed her temples and sighed. She was sitting next to Grimmy with her legs dangling off the edge of a cliff. There was still no news on the location of the fairies, even with her skeletons and bats searching in full force. 10 years of searching had been fruitless.
"Just relax," Grimmy said as he yawned and flapped his wings. "We can handle anything Stella throws at us."
The awe-inspiring white flame, Little Miss Fluffykins, squealed as she was displaced and slid off Grimmy's back. Linda sighed again and leaned back onto her arms. She frowned as she sensed a vortex of magic forming behind her.
"Didn't I tell Exenter not to follow me?"
she asked,
as she lobbed a small fireball over her shoulder without looking back. Linda's eyes narrowed, and she tilted her head as the fireball shot back towards her, almost burning her hair. She turned her head around.
"Sorry," she said to the ten-horned demon. "I thought you were someone else."
Toffle lowered her sword.
"Hi, Auntie."
"Toffle?" Lindis asked as she raised an eyebrow. "You've grown."
A blue blur darted past Lindis towards Toffle. Toffle's body flickered, and she grasped Fluffykins by one of her hind legs.
"This is..."
Toffle asked as Fluffykins snarled and snapped at her arm.
"Ver's granddaughter, the awe-inspiring white flame, Little Miss Fluffykins," Linda said. "Her mother is a phoenix."
Toffle flipped Fluffykins onto her back and tickled her belly.
"Let me guess, Ver named her?"
Linda's lips quirked upwards.
"It was that obvious, huh?"
Toffle nodded as Fluffykins squealed in protest. For a while, only Fluffykins made any sounds.
"You're not going to ask about him?" Lindis asked, leaning against Grimmy's belly.
Toffle bit her lip.
"Should I?" she replied, as she tossed the protesting Fluffykins up and down. "He never contacted me this whole time."
"He was comatose for 10 years, Lindis said, as she observed Toffle's face. It froze.
"He woke up 3 months ago and wanted to look for you, but I persuaded him not to."
Toffle knitted her eyebrows and frowned.
"Then I guess I can't be too angry at him," Toffle said after a while, and sighed. "Is he all right?"
Lindis nodded and caught Fluffykins as she flew into her arms.
"He was really miserable about the whole almost killing you incident," she said as she preened Fluffykins' wings. "Most likely still is. I sent him to the human kingdom to vent a bit."
"Is that fine?"
Toffle asked and raised an eyebrow.
"He'll be all right."
"I'm meant for the humans."
"Oh, probably. If there's an incident, I can always play the 'you stole a dragon's baby' card," Linda said and smiled. "Are you going to go look for him?"
Toffle lowered her head.
"I'm not sure what I would say if I met him."
"How about, 'Hi, my name is Toffle. You almost killed me before. Please take responsibility.' That sounds good, right?"
Grimmy asked and grinned.
"No,"
Toffle protested and shook her head. Her face turned red.
"Actually, that might work."
Grimmy chuckled. "Of course it would. I wouldn't have suggested it otherwise."
Lindis nodded. "His personality hasn't changed too much, after all," she said to Toffle, who was drawing circles in the ground with a stick.
"You seem unsure." "I'm not sure if I'm strong enough to not be a burden. What if someone dies for me again?"
Toffle sighed.
"I trained a lot at Fuselage. I'm stronger than Dustin and a few members of Swirling Wind. But Ver was stronger than them 10 years ago. I was pretty confident in my abilities before coming back," she said, and glanced at Grimmy. "But seeing a dragon again just reminds me of how small I actually am."
The ground trembled as Grimmy laughed.
"Everything's small when faced with a dragon," he said, and puffed up his chest.
Linda snorted and smacked Grimmy's side.
"Would you like to fight against me?" she asked Toffle. "I can tell you how close or far away you are from Ver."
Toffle raised her head.
"Really?"
"Of course,"
Linda said, and stood up while stretching.
"I won't be going easy, though."
Toffle flashed her teeth and unsheathed her Zweihander. "I wouldn't have it any other way." Grimmy placed Fluffykins on his head and took a few steps back.
"Use the new soul I gave you,"
Grimmy called out to Lindis. She made a face.
"We'll see,"
Lindis said.
"Ready?"
Toffle nodded as she exhaled and tightened her grip on her sword.
"Ready."
Linda stamped her foot, and a spear of earth shot out of the ground underneath Toffle.
Toffle slid backwards and slashed her sword downwards, breaking the earthen spear and sending a blade of wind towards Lindis. Lindis waved her hand, and a wall of air disrupted the wind blade. Toffle disappeared, and Lindis whipped her body around, crossing her arms in front of her chest. Toffle's blade cut towards Lindis, but a black layer of mist on Lindis' arms absorbed the slash. The mist rumbled as if it was boiling, and spikes emerged from the darkness, shooting outwards at Toffle. The chill ran down Toffle's spine as she held her breath and disappeared again, this time materializing in the air above and behind Lindis. A chain made of shadows rose out of the ground and wrapped itself around Toffle's ankle as Lindis whirled around, blocking the blade with her arms. Toffle's body jerked backwards as the chain whipped her towards the ground. She tried to teleport, but the chain flashed with a black light, and her spell failed. She summoned a cushion of air behind herself an instant before she slammed into the ground. Toffle exhaled sharply and gritted her teeth as the chain dragged her along the ground. The runes on her sword glowed with a white light, and she slashed it against the chain before rolling backwards and dodging a fireball flying towards her. The chain dissolved into a black liquid that merged back into Lindis' shadow. Lindis raised an eyebrow. "Nice sword," she said, as 30 purple balls of fire materialized and circled around her body. Toffle grunted and stabbed her sword into the ground. A blue snake emerged from the sword's edge and slithered towards Lindis, leaving a trail of ice behind it. Toffle dragged her sword through the ground as she ran in a circle around Lindis, surrounding her with snakes. Lindis ignored them and threw lightning bolts at Toffle as the purple fireballs defended her from the ice autonomously. Toffle weaved through the lightning and raised her sword above her head. The runes lit up with a purple light as a green layer formed along the edge of the blade. Lindis raised her arms, ready to defend herself from a wind blade, but an explosion resounded above Toffle's head, accelerating the blade downwards. The blade shrieked, and the tip of the sword vanished, reappearing directly in front of Lindis, connected by a portal in the air. Lindis enveloped her arms with a black mist to block, but the blade vanished again, entering another portal. It exited from a portal behind Lindis and struck her back, leaving a line of blood. Lindis grimaced and tried to channel mana to her wound, but failed, silenced. Toffle teleported in front of Lindis and swung her sword, using the flat of her blade. Lindis exhaled, and a sword made of light appeared in her hands, while a white halo rose above her head. The white blade passed through the Zweihänder, freezing it in place, before stopping in front of Toffle's neck. Toffle froze and swallowed. The blade of light disappeared a moment later. Grimmy smiled.
"You used it after all."
Lindis faced her head the other way, ignoring him.
"How?" Toffle asked, as she wiped the sweat from her forehead. "I thought I won when I managed to hit you with the silencing slash."
"It was a good attack," Lindis said, and nodded as a layer of green light appeared on her back, mending the wound. The halo above her head dispersed.
"But unfortunately for you, I developed an attack that works through all kinds of silence."
"You developed it? Stealing my credit," Grimmy said and snorted. "Isn't she mean?"
He rolled his eyes towards Spliffykins. Lindis ignored him again.
"I think you would still lose against Fur," she said. "He awakened the dragon bloodline in his imprint. Magical attacks, like your silence, have minimal effects on him now. Your blade, sped up by the explosion, might be able to catch him off guard and injure him, but everything else was too weak. You could avoid him with your teleports, but you'll run out of mana first." Toffle sighed and sheathed her sword. She stuck her hand in a portal and grabbed Fluffykins. The blue boar squealed as she struggled, flapping her wings, but Toffle snuggled her into her chest.
"What class are you?" she asked Lindis.
Lindis smirked.
"That's for me to know."
"And me," Grimmy said as he yawned.
34.
"Hey, these aren't done yet."
A fairy with purple hair hovered above four writhing humans. She turned towards the fairy beside her.
The other fairy looked like an identical twin, except for her green hair.
Ah, we were short three worms, so I split one into four,
the green-haired fairy said, and scratched her head.
Logistics error higher up in the chain. It's not our fault.
She shrugged.
Eh,
the other fairy grumbled and pouted.
That means we have to wait here for another 12 hours. I'm going to go check on the two primaries. Maybe they'll be ready. I checked on them yesterday. They still haven't converted,
the green-haired fairy said, and grabbed the other fairy's ankle before she could fly away.
Still,
the purple-haired fairy leaned back and sat on the air.
It's been almost a decade. Yeah, well, their birth flower's gone missing a few centuries ago,
the green-haired fairy said and crossed her arms.
It's not too surprising that the process is taking forever.
An orange-haired fairy flew into the cave from above.
What's taking so long? She asked.
She saw the squirming humans.
Oh, did you misplace the worms again?
It wasn't me this time.
Ah, whatever. I don't want to track them down,
the orange-haired fairy said as she yawned and sat next to her sisters.
The queen's too busy to notice. What's a few missing worms anyway? We can let the tertiaries handle it.
A human guard marched through the streets. He looked up at the sun and sighed.
Just a few more hours and I can watch the competition with my kids, he thought. It'll probably be over by then. Man, no one would dare to rob the nobles' houses anyway. Why am I even here?
He hung his head and dragged his feet through the empty streets. A sobbing sound caught his attention, and he looked up while facing towards an alley. There was a girl leaning against a wall while hugging her shoulders. She was hunched over, and her body shook as strangled sobbing noises escaped through her lips.
Hey!
The guard called out and entered the alley.
Are you all right?
The girl continued to shake as her face snapped towards him. Her eyes were snake-like and shifting in colors.
Aren't you that warrior girl, Stella?
The guard asked as he squatted beside her.
Did something happen at the competition?
He put his hand on her shoulder.
All right. You had to fight the prince. It's understandable to be scared after that.
The guard sighed while shaking his head.
But isn't it too early for the...
His words froze. Stella smiled at the guard as his hand fell off her shoulder, along with his arm. The guard looked down. Blood gushed out of the stump that was once his arm. He shrieked and fell backwards, clutching his residual limb. A red blur shot out of his severed arm towards his face, but it stopped before it collided with him, revealing a worm wriggling in front of his nose, its body thrashing in the air. Stella chuckled as she grabbed the other end of the worm with her left hand. A hole, leaking black liquid, could be seen on her forearm. Her right hand was holding a sword that dripped with the guard's blood.
So that's why I felt like I was losing control, she said,
as she lifted the worm above herself and ripped its head off with her teeth before swallowing. She continued to consume the remainder of the worm in a similar fashion.
Naughty little worm, splitting yourself in half to try to overtake my body.
She smiled at her belly before turning towards the guard who was staring at her with wide eyes.
I think you've seen too much, Stella said,
and smiled at him.
You did help me, though.
Promise me you won't say anything.
The guard nodded his head as tears formed in his eyes.
I didn't see anything, he said as his voice quavered. I swear, my arm just fell off on its own.
A crunching noise echoed through the alley.
Too bad, Stella sang. I don't trust humans.
She smacked her lips and grinned.
I should play with the prince before they disqualify me. Wouldn't want to be late.
She left the alley while licking the blood off her sword, oblivious to the two worm-sized holes left in the wall behind her. Rudolph waited at the center of the stone arena with his arms across his chest. Johann was lying on the grass behind him with closed eyes, a bubble of snot extending from his snout. The referee stood outside the stage, looking at the sundial on the ground.
She probably ran away,
someone from the spectator seats said and grumbled.
Just move on to the next match, another person said. We all know who's going to win anyway. Stella still has 2 minutes to show up before she automatically forfeits the match, the referee said, ignoring the murmurs from the crowd. I'm here! I'm here! A voice called out. I just needed to get a snack to pick myself up. Stella brushed past the crowd and walked onto the stage. Rudolph frowned. Are you injured? He asked, staring at her foot. It was covered in blood. Ah, Stella smiled, as a strand of saliva leaked from her lips. I must have stepped on a tomato in the marketplace. I'm perfectly fine. Her figure blurred as she appeared in front of Rudolph, staring into his eyes. See? Rudolph's eyes widened as he took a step back. Stella giggled as she took a step forward. Why don't you call your dragon onto the stage? She asked as she took another step forward. The referee cleared his throat. Fighters to their positions, please. Stella grinned and sauntered back to her side of the arena. I'm telling you now, she said. If you don't call him up, you won't have a chance to later. Rudolph narrowed his eyes. We'll see about that, he said, and equipped his sword and shield. The first person to force the other to surrender, or renders the other incapable of surrendering, wins. Soul-destroying techniques are forbidden. Violators will be punished by death, the referee said. Begin! You aren't going to draw your sword? Rudolph asked as he raised his eyebrow. Stella's body blurred. Don't need it, she said from behind him as she launched him forward with a punch. Johann roared as his back flashed with a green light. His massive head glanced around as he rose to his feet. Rudolph tumbled through the air as he struggled to orient his body. Stella appeared above him with one leg raised. She whipped it downwards, smashing her heel into Rudolph's back like an axe, sending him straight towards the floor. The impact cracked the platform, and a green ripple of light flowed through his body. Johann let out another roar and scrambled onto the stage as two green marks shone on his back and belly. Rudolph snorted as he lifted himself off the ground. There wasn't a single scratch on his body. He narrowed his eyes and took in a deep breath. Stella cocked her head to the side. Sturdy, aren't you? I wonder what would happen if I killed your fake dragon first. She smirked and dashed towards Johann, her body turning into a blur. Johann swung his paw outwards and smacked Stella head on. She flew backwards and rolled a few times before standing back up. A thin line of blood trickled through a cracked scale on Johann's claw. Stella coughed out a wad of coagulated blood containing minuscule green orbs into her hand and dashed at Johann. Once again, Johann deflected Stella with the same motion, and Stella repeated her tumble before climbing to her feet. Rudolph and Johann closed in on her from her left and right sides. She ran 2 steps towards Johann before changing directions towards Rudolph and kneed him in the head before he or Johann could react. Rudolph fell onto his back, and Stella stomped onto his nose, but she was unable to leave a mark. A green light flashed on Johann's snout, causing him to bellow and lunge at Stella. She spat on Rudolph's face. Coward! Rudolph's face contorted as he swung his sword, but Stella raised both of her hands, retreating backwards. I surrender, she said, and kicked Rudolph towards the charging dragon. Johann dug his claws into the ground and caught Rudolph with his mouth before glaring at Stella, who stuck her tongue out at him. The spectators, who had been silent since the first punch, broke out into a commotion. The prince won, but it feels like he lost.
What was that speed?
Honey, you should recruit her as a bodyguard. Stella whirled around on her heels and stepped off the stage. Her body blurred, and she disappeared before the referee even announced her loss. A student was sitting on a balcony overlooking the arena. He held a cup of tea in his hands. Beside him, his great sword was propped up against the banister's rail. His metal helmet rested on the hilt. If I were in Rudolph's position, he thought and shuddered. He shook his head. No point thinking about it. She's out of the contest.
Hello, Trent, a feminine voice said from behind him.
The student stiffened and whirled around. You?
he said with wide eyes, and glanced at the arena before turning back towards the girl.
Weren't you just there?
I was, Stella said, and stepped forward. And now I'm here. She placed her hand under the student's chin and tilted his head up.
Let me borrow your body for a bit,
she whispered, and locked lips with him. His eyes widened before he relaxed and lifted his hand to her face while moving his left hand to her waist. His body stiffened mid-motion. Seconds later, his eyes shook in their sockets as his body twitched and thrashed about. Stella collapsed on top of the twitching student. His eyes closed as a shudder ran through his body. When he opened his eyes again, they were serpentine and swirling with a myriad of colors. He stood up and wore the helmet that was on the sword, lowering the visor. He snapped his fingers, and a black fire enveloped Stella's body. A few moments passed, and only an ashy residue remained. 35. Ver walked alongside Paul, who was holding onto Lillian's left hand. Lillian's right arm was linked together with Michelle's by their elbows.
You have a pretty high tolerance, Paul said to Ver
as he led the girls around a signpost. He shook his head as the girls giggled.
Isn't their tolerance just too low? Ver asked.
The four of them were following a sentry towards the temple. Hey! Michelle called out. Hey! Mr. Sentry! Hey! Who won the warrior competition?
The prince won first place. Trent won second place, the sentry said as he continued marching.
Ah, that stupid egg. I was hoping someone would kick his ass, Michelle said and stumbled. She giggled and looked at Lillian.
You did a pretty good job.
Paul sighed. I can't believe she only had 2 glasses of wine. Has she never drank before? The sentry cleared his throat.
She is the Pope's daughter, he said,
as the group arrived in front of the temple. The sentry nodded at the 2 guards standing in front of the door before he turned around and speed-walked away.
Well, he seemed to be in an awful hurry to get away,
Michelle said as she staggered up the steps, supporting herself with Lillian's arm.
It's because you're embarrassing, Ver said and shrugged.
You're embarrassing, Michelle pouted. Everyone was only staring because of your mask. The 2 guards looked at each other before opening the door and stepping aside. Paul passed Lillian's hand to Ver and nodded while saying, I'll be waiting right here.
What? You're not coming with us?
Michelle asked as she struggled against Lillian.
Come here.
Only winners are allowed to enter the temple, the guard to their right said. He can't enter.
That's not fair, Michelle whined. He's a good healer. He just couldn't compete in the main competition because the preliminaries weren't fair.
But then I would have lost to you, Paul said, and scratched his head as Ver tugged the 2 girls through the door.
All right,
Michelle giggled. The guards closed the door as Paul sighed and shook his head. Inside the temple, the Pope was waiting in front of an altar, facing the 6 winners of the competition as they approached and came to a halt in front of him. A golden fire burned in a bowl on the altar, emitting a thick yellow smoke that converged towards the ceiling of the temple.
The 6 of you have proven yourselves worthy of receiving the blessing of our God, the Pope said and spread his arms.
God? Ver asked while tilting his head. I thought we were here to be blessed by spirits.
You are, the Pope said as he raised an eyebrow. Did you not know that our God is the collective whole of our spirits? When we leave our mortal coils for the last time, we become one with our God, and our God becomes one with us.
He was raised in isolation, Father, Michelle said and sniffed. Can you imagine not living with other people? He must have been so lonely.
She sobbed and hiccuped, burying her face in her hands. The Pope's brow creased, and he frowned at his daughter, but kept his mouth shut.
I understand now, he said to Ver, and sighed. You poor soul. You've never been enlightened or baptized by their aura before.
The yellow smoke behind the Pope thickened and swirled in the air above the group. Rays of golden light shone down from the yellow cloud and bathed the 7 people in the room with a soft glow.
Seven gasps sounded out at the same time as the group shuddered. Fur lost feeling in his legs, and his knees buckled, but he managed to stay standing by taking a step forward. The Pope fell to the floor and prostrated himself. Michelle fell next, followed by the prince, and then Roy. Lillian let out a moan and also prostrated herself, while Trent shuddered and panted, still standing with his hands on his knees. A line of saliva dripped out of his mouth before he fell to the floor on one knee. Veins bulged outwards on his forehead. Chills coursed through Ver's body, eliciting goosebumps all over his skin. His muscles relaxed and his shoulders drooped. He was about to fall when a roar rang through his head, causing his whole body to tense. Underneath his mask, a dark rune appeared on his forehead, and a black aura rushed through his body, devouring the golden specks floating in his blood. A dragon does not kneel. Ver's eyes narrowed underneath his mask as he straightened his back and crossed his arms, sticking his chest out. He raised his head and glared at the glowing cloud, letting the waves of light wash over him. A smile appeared on Trent's lips when Ver's posture changed. But everyone else remained prostrating on the ground with their eyes closed, oblivious to their surroundings. Time passed, and the light dimmed before fading away. Trent wiped his hands on the back of his pants as he stood up. Lillian's body shuddered as her eyes opened. She climbed to her feet and glanced at her palms, an odd expression on her face. Roy rose at the same time as Rudolph. Michelle stood up next, her steps no longer unsteady, and her face no longer flushed. The Pope stood last. He smiled.
"Did you feel that? Our God coursing through your bodies?" the Pope said.
He made eye contact with everyone, but his gaze stayed on Ver.
"Would you like to become a member of our church?
The same pleasure runs through your veins every time you follow their will. This is only a small fraction of the true God." He gestured at the cloud above the group.
"It felt nice," Ver said and nodded.
The Pope's smile widened. Ver snorted.
"But it's not for me."
The Pope's face froze.
"Ah, truly regrettable," he said, and nodded.
His gaze passed over the six winners once more.
"All of you are welcome to join us at any time."
"Is it over?" Lillian asked as she bit her lip. "That was the blessing?"
The Pope shook his head.
"That was just a simple scan spell. Each of you will enter one of the rooms," he gestured towards the doors behind himself, "for your blessing. I cannot accompany any of you."
The yellow cloud split into six streams of smoke and flowed through the doors behind the Pope. The winners exchanged glances with each other except for Ver, who had already started walking towards a door when the cloud split. The doors closed behind the six without a sound once they entered the rooms. Ver tensed as the yellow smoke swirled around his body before it rushed to the center of the room, condensing into a humanoid figure. A man's face formed, but the rest of the body remained as smoke. The man clicked his tongue.
"You have a very unique body," he said. "We're not quite sure whose blessing you should receive."
The face disappeared, but it was soon replaced by a woman's.
"You have a tremendous amount of mana and physical strength," the woman said and sighed. "If only I had as much strength as you did."
The face blurred as it was replaced by another woman.
"What's your preferred weapon?"
the new woman asked Ver.
"It doesn't matter," Ver said. "Anything I can hit or stab with."
"You've never had formal training in any discipline?" the woman asked as she raised an eyebrow. Ver shook his head. "That's a surprise. The other people you came with were all well-trained."
Ver shrugged and crossed his arms. "I'm different."
The woman chuckled. "Yes, we could tell. You're the first person who hasn't kneeled to us after witnessing our splendor." "Ah, this is truly difficult."
"What kind of blessings do you give?" Ver asked. "Can you just give me a list to choose from?"
The woman's face was replaced by a mustached man's.
"Insolence!" the man said as his mustache flared upwards. "We tailor-fit our blessings to each individual. This isn't a food stand where you can pick and choose what you want."
The Pope smiled as a stream of smoke flew out of a room. The volume of smoke was similar to the amount that entered. The door opened, and Roy stepped out.
"What blessing did the spirits grant you?"
the Pope asked. Roy smiled as a circular rune appeared on his forehead. He held out his hand, and a yellow orb floated above his palm before lengthening until it became a staff.
"They said it would amplify my spell's effects and decrease the amount of mana it takes to cast them," he said, as he admired the etchings on the staff.
The Pope nodded his head. Another stream of smoke flew out of a different room. This time, only half of the volume that entered appeared. The door opened and Michelle stepped out. The Pope's body tensed before his smile widened. 50%, he thought. They used half the energy to bless her. Three more streams of smoke appeared, and Rudolph Trent and Lillian returned to the altar room. Lillian conjured a bow and arrow in a similar manner as Roy. Tears appeared in the corners of her eyes as the bow pulsed in her hand.
"We're just waiting for one more," the Pope said, as he gestured at Fur's door. "And then the party will be complete."
10 minutes passed with everyone testing their new blessings.
"Should it be taking this long, Father?"
Michelle asked.
The Pope frowned and shook his head. "No. Usually a spirit takes interest in someone and forms themselves with this smoke to grant their inheritance. That's what happened with all of you, right?"
The group members nodded. Lillian paced back and forth as another 10 minutes passed.
"Can we open the door and check on him? What if something happened?"
"We can't. Only the spirits can open the doors," the Pope said. "I'm sure nothing..."
The door opened, causing the Pope to stop mid-sentence. The spirits used all the energy, he thought, as Ver entered the altar room.
Ver burped. A wisp of smoke, shaped like a mustache, slipped out from under his mask and rose into the air. The six people before him stared at the mustache-shaped smoke wisp as it floated towards the ceiling.
Lillian's mouth dropped open.
"You ate a god?" she asked. "What the actual fu-"
Ver burped again, and another wisp of smoke leaked out of his mask.
"Excuse me," he said, and cleared his throat. "I didn't eat him on purpose. He just kind of got swallowed, and it was just part of him, right?" I don't understand," the Pope said with a pale face. "What have you done?"
His eyes widened as his hands grabbed the sides of his head.
"Isn't he still there?"
Ver asked as he pointed at the ceiling. The cloud of smoke condensed and pressed itself into a corner. Ver scratched his head. Was it scared of him?
"How dare you!"
the Pope roared as a white rune shone on his forehead. A ball of light emerged from his hand and took the shape of a two-headed battle axe. A silver light rushed up his arms, solidifying as it traveled to his shoulders.
"Even death cannot pardon you for what you've done."
His irises disappeared as his eyes glowed with a yellow light. He braced himself to swing.
"Dad, wait!"
Michelle yelled as she ran towards Burr. The Pope swept his axe to the side, knocking Michelle over with sheer wind pressure. She tumbled along the ground and stopped when she crashed into the wall.
"Shatter!" the Pope shouted.
His loose white robes disintegrated as a wave of heat poured out of his body. Cracks formed in the air, distorting the axe's image as it swung downwards towards Ver. Ver shifted his body back, dodging by a hair's breadth. The Pope bared his teeth as the axe slammed into the ground, creating a web of fissures that radiated outwards. Ver tilted his head. A second later, his mask shattered into pieces, revealing his golden eyes. The ring that saved his life in the Nagas area more than 10 years ago split in half and dropped to the floor. Lust's blade disintegrated, and its hilt fell from its sheath. Ver frowned at the fallen hilt.
"You shouldn't have done that," he said, as his eyes narrowed.
His knees bent, and his shoulders hunched over as he swiped his right hand horizontally. A black dragon claw, interlaced with bands of golden scales, materialized in the air a few meters in front of him. It raked towards the Pope, who blocked it with his axe's haft. Ver slammed his left hand into the ground as the Pope was sliding to the right from the previous impact. Another claw materialized above the Pope and rushed downwards, forcing the Pope to his knees. The Pope's gauntlets absorbed the damage from the blow, even though the attack struck his back and head. Fractures formed along the armor on his forearms, but they disappeared a moment later as a white light covered them. Vur's frown deepened, and he alternated slamming the ground with his right and left hands. A barrage of dragon claws rained down on the Pope. The Pope's face turned red, and the veins on his neck bulged as he raised his axe above his head while he struggled to stand. More and more cracks appeared on the silver armor as if the regeneration couldn't keep up with the destruction.
"Stop! Both of you, stop!"
Lillian shouted as she raised her bow. The tip of her arrow shone as bright as the sun, blinding everyone in the room. A final crashing noise resounded through the chamber before it fell silent. The light dimmed, revealing a single figure in the center of the room. Vur stood with his forearms shielding his eyes. The Pope was on his knees in front of the wall across from Vur. A human-shaped web of cracks was imprinted on the surface behind him. The golden light in the Pope's eyes shone brighter as he lunged forwards, swinging his axe towards Vur.
"Stop!"
A wall of yellow smoke rose up in front of the Pope, halting his forward movement. The smoke converged into a human-shaped figure which placed its palm on the Pope's forehead. The golden light in his eyes dimmed as his irises returned.
"Grandfather," the Pope whispered, as his eyes focused on the golden spirit,
A slap echoed through the room.
"I didn't raise you like this,"
the spirit said as it retracted its hand. The Pope touched his cheek and lowered his head, his eyes wide. The spirit turned to face Vur.
"Forgive my grandson," he said. "He was too impulsive. His devotion to us clouded his rational thinking."
Vur paused before nodding and standing up straight.
"I know that feeling," he said,
as an image of Yella flashed through his head. The Pope raised his head and frowned at Michelle, who was standing with the support of her staff, guilt clouding his heart. He winced before lowering his head again, staying silent. After a moment, his eyes widened and his head snapped upwards to stare at Vur.
"You're the dragon child."
"What's going on?"
Lillian asked, as her grip on her bow and arrow tightened, pointing in between Vur and the spirit. The Pope opened his mouth to speak, but stopped when his grandfather sighed.
"A portion of Lady Salandra's soul entered your body, granting you the blessings of increased perception and the right to manifest her weapons,"
the spirit said to Lillian as he pointed at her bow. He gestured towards Vur.
"We tried to do the same with this young man, but there's a monster living in his soul. It latched onto Sir Edward and consumed most of him, along with every other soul in that room. We only know this because a tiny bit of the collective soul returned to us and relayed what occurred."
"What are you going to do to him?"
Lillian asked with a quavering voice, arrow still knocked. Vur frowned and crossed his arms across his chest.
The spirit shook his head. "You needn't worry. It's not his fault that a monster is living inside of him," he said. "There's no permanent damage done to us. It's not even a minor inconvenience."
"Why do you call it a monster?" Vur asked as he bared his teeth.
His eyes narrowed. "It's my mother's imprint." The spirit stroked his chin.
"I'm afraid it's not that simple," he said,
as his gaze fell on the Pope. He looked back at Vur.
"I assume you were imprinted by a dragon."
Vur nodded.
"What was inside you wasn't a dragon, at least not one that we've ever seen,"
the spirit said.
"It had horns shaped like a demon's, four wings, and a blade attached to the end of its tail. Unleash its aura, and you'll see."
Lindis frowned as a chill ran down her spine. She stopped etching runes on the tree in front of her and turned around.
"What's the matter?"
Tafel asked. Her body was covered with sweat as she poured mana into the tree. Lindis had asked her to help set up a few spell formations. Tafel didn't know what they did, but she complied anyway.
It's Vir. He unleashed his awakening, Lindis replied, and knit her eyebrows. Grimmy's eyes opened as he smiled.
What exactly does that mean? Toffle asked as she wiped her brow with her sleeve.
Either he's really, really angry, or he's in dire straits. It's a lose-lose situation, no matter which you pick, Lindis said.
I'm coming with you, Toffle said.
Me too,
Grimmy said, as his wings flared outwards. Fluffykins growled on top of his head and mimicked him, spreading her wings.
I want to see my newest modifications in action.
All right, Lindis said. A pair of skeletons gathered the fallen magical equipment that she had lying around. Toffle stood behind Lindis, taking one last look at the trees she helped inscribe.
How are we getting there? Toffle asked.
Grimmy and Lindis turned to look at her. Grimmy tilted his head.
What do you mean? You're teleporting us, obviously.
What, me?
Toffle asked. Her lips parted as her eyes widened. Were they serious?
Of course, Linda said, as she dragged Toffle by her arm to Grimmy's side. Who else? It'd take too long to fly there.
But I don't know where we're going, Toffle said as she bit her lower lip.
And I've never teleported a dragon before. I don't have enough mana to do that.
It's fine, Linda said. We'll pour mana into your body while you set up the spell. We want to teleport about 2,000 kilometers in that direction. Lindis pointed to the northeast.
I really don't think this is a good idea, Toffle said as she took a step backwards.
What's the worst that could happen?
Grimmy asked as he stretched his front legs.
That wacky human does it all the time.
We could end up hundreds of meters underground and suffocate, Toffle said as she took another step backwards.
We could end up hundreds of meters above ground and...
Fly! Because I'm a dragon, Grimmy said as he grinned. If we teleport below ground, we'll dig. If we teleport into the water, we'll swim. If we teleport into lava, we'll... Well, you'd probably die, but I'd be fine.
I am very much against dying, Toffle said as she lowered her head. Lindis raised an eyebrow.
Don't you want to save Vir? How can you hope to walk alongside him if you can't even reach him? If ever a time came when Vir needed you to save him and we weren't around to help, what would you do?
Toffle ground her teeth. All right, she said and clenched her hands. I'll do it.
What is this?
Lillian whispered. She was sitting with her knees folded under her. Her hands were on the floor, supporting her body from behind. Her head was tilted upwards with her lips parted and eyes wide. Cold sweat rolled down her back, and she gulped. Michelle, Roy, and Rudolph were in similar positions as Lillian, their backs to the walls. The Pope was kneeling with his body shielded by the spirit standing over him. Trent stood in front of Rudolph with a grin plastered on his face.
Amazing, Trent whispered, while licking his lips as his body shuddered.
Vir stood in the center of the room with his eyes closed. Waves of black light cascaded out of his body, washing over the inhabitants of the room. A layer of black mana obscured the finer details of his body. Scales formed along the aura, and two pairs of wings sprouted from his back. The pair on his shoulders looked sharp and dragon-like, while the ones above his waist were rounded and similar to a fairy's. A bladed tail extended from his coccyx, and claws covered his hands and feet. The aura around his head took the shape of a dragon with a pair of horns growing from his temples, similar in shape to the ones Yella had. The faintest hint of a golden mustache glowed below his nostrils. His golden slit eyes opened and shone through the dark aura. The spirit in front of her sighed.
It's really no wonder why you were able to consume us so easily, he said.
Vir glanced at his hands before craning his neck to inspect his wings. The spirit walked in a circle around Vir.
We've seen hundreds of elves unleash auras during the wars, but we've never seen any that looked like this. There have also been a few of us who have been imprinted, but we never managed to awaken at all.
Shouts sounded outside the temple, and shrieks echoed through the air as the ground shook. Dust rained down from the temple ceiling as cracks spread down the walls. Rays of light pierced through the room as the roof was ripped away, revealing a black dragon's face.
Eh? Grimmy blinked his eyes. Why aren't you killing anything?
Lindis peeked over Grimmy's snout.
Maybe he just finished transforming? It always takes a while the first time, she said. Let's wait a bit and see.
Grimmy nodded while sitting down.
Right,
he said, and placed the roof back on top of the temple as if he was covering a pot with a lid. He looked down at Paul, who was sitting in a puddle of urine near Grimmy's feet. The other humans in the vicinity were in the midst of hiding or running away.
What are you looking at?
Grimmy asked, as a wisp of smoke drifted out of his nostrils.
Never seen such a handsome creature before?
He lowered his head towards Paul, squinting at him.
Why aren't you running?
My friends are there,
Paul said, with a pale face as his shaking arm pointed toward the temple.
Oh?
Grimmy tilted his head.
I guess you're not too bad of a human. Good thing I didn't squish you on accident. You should do something about wetting your pants, though. It's not very manly.
Grimmy's tail thumped against the floor as he sighed.
I wish Burr would hurry up. I really want to see how he uses that Leviathan tail.
He lay on the ground with his belly on the road, staring at the door to the temple. Toffle hugged Fluffykins as she paced around in front of Lindis on the steps. Paul purified his robe and cleaned up the mess he made, but he was still sitting on the floor since his legs wouldn't stop trembling.
Paul squeaked. Wasn't there a pact made a long time ago forbidding dragons from entering the capital?
Ah!
Grimmy squinted his eyes at Paul.
I'm sorry,
Paul squealed, as he covered his head with his arms and curled up into a ball. Linda scratched her head.
Yeah, there was something like that, wasn't there?
She rummaged through her bag.
I think I still have it somewhere here.
What? Toffle asked, as she stopped pacing and looked up.
Why would you have that? Because I wrote it?
Lindis raised an eyebrow. She pulled a rolled-up piece of laminated paper out of her bag.
Why else?
And it's just a copy, so it doesn't matter if you burn it. She glared at Grimmy, who shut his mouth and swallowed the flames on his tongue.
Let me see that,
Grimmy said as he held out his claw. Lindis placed it on his palm. He scanned the document and nodded.
There's no issue with me being here, then.
Grimmy grinned at Paul, who was still hiding his head.
It clearly says, dragons will not invade any human establishment that has a scion of the royal family.
Paul's shoulders were hunched over as he peeked up at Grimmy's face.
But the prince is...
Dragons. Plural. I am a singular dragon,
Grimmy said, as he passed the document back to Lindis.
I see no issues with my presence in the area.
He blinked at Lindis.
You knew.
Lindis smiled.
Of course. I wrote it.
What other loopholes did you include?
Grimmy asked as he reached for the paper again.
Those are for me to abuse,
Lindis said, as she stuck out her tongue and incinerated the paper before Grimmy could grab it.
And, for the sake of the human race, for you to never find out.
The door to the temple creaked and Toffle stiffened. A few moments passed with no other noises, and she exhaled while looking down at Fluffykins, who tried to bite her nose.
Why is this so nerve-wracking?
She asked, as she held Fluffykins in front of her face. She sighed. I'd rather fight three reapers at the same time. Fluffykins tilted her head and squirmed in her grip. Toffle frowned at Lindis.
Is she not imprinted?
Toffle asked, as she parted the fur on Fluffykins' forehead, ignoring the boar's protests.
No,
Lindis said, and offered Fluffykins a piece of roast pork. Snuffles is a male, so he has no instincts whatsoever to imprint his offspring, and her mother didn't have an imprint.
Somehow that feels wrong.
Well, phoenixes never existed on this continent until 800 years ago. They came at the same time as the humans from Fuselage, Linda said, and looked up at the sky. They were as arrogant as dragons, and vied for the top spot in the ecosystem.
So the dragons wiped out the phoenixes, but spared their eggs, effectively leaving their race as strong as wyverns. Linda sighed and shook her head. A lot of dragons